Support for this program by Fairbanks, Alaska, the Golden Heart City. Go see a Gold Panthers game. Visit downtown art galleries or drive out to Chena Hot Springs. Exploring your home state is the COVID-safe way to enjoy the summer.
Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo. I'm Tara Gatewood. Our music maker, Klee Benali, is with us today to disrupt cultural genocide with sounds like these. Flashbangs and tear gas, the moment our anger transcended suffering. How far will we be? This Diné musician calls this work performance art intervention. And we'll hear why right after National Native News as we visit with Klee Benali, our September music maker. It happened so fast, structural
whiplash, a crashing culture of drama. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Six Ojibwe tribes in Wisconsin are suing the state in federal court to stop the fall wolf hunt, saying their treaty rights are being violated. Danielle Kading has more.
The Lacta, Flambeau, Red Cliff, and Bad River tribes are among those suing Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Secretary Preston Cole and the Natural Resources Board. They say state officials have failed to put safeguards in place to protect tribe share of the wolf harvest quota that they're entitled to under federal treaties. In February, hunters blew past their quota, killing 218 wolves. Lacta, Flambeau Tribal President John Johnson Sr. says tribes intend to fight to uphold their treaty rights.
And I would like to see the state working with the tribes, you know, allowing us to take our fair share.
Tribes aim to protect the animal from harvest because they view the wolf as a brother, but they claim the Natural Resources Board is trying to cancel out their share with the quota it set for this fall. The board's chair, Fred Prain, says the board is following the law.
And we believe we've done that. And if a judge rules differently, then we'll have to, you know, digest the response from the judge and then meet and deliberate as a board.
The Wisconsin DNR says it's reviewing the lawsuit. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
A coalition of tribes and environmental groups is urging the federal government to overhaul how it regulates mining in the western U.S. and Alaska. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, they say current rules disproportionately impact indigenous people and harm the environment.
The Havasupai tribe from Arizona and the Fort Belknap Indian community in Montana, along with other groups, filed a rulemaking petition with the U.S. Interior Department last week. They're urging the agency to tighten and modernize federal oversight of hard rock mining on public lands. Prospecting in the U.S. is still largely guided by the General Mining Law of 1872, signed by President Ulysses S. Grant. The tribes say the law is long outdated and to blame for polluting sacred sites, water sources, and animal habitat for generations, and fails to hold polluters accountable. They're calling on the Bureau of Land Management to further protect tribal and cultural resources along with the environment and close loopholes they say allow the mining industry to avoid public review and tribal consultation. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, hard rock mining has contaminated more than 40% of watersheds in the West. Leaders of the Havasupai tribe say uranium extraction near the Grand Canyon could contaminate their sole water source. The Navajo Nation is still grappling with the effects of more than 500 abandoned uranium mines left over from the Cold War. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
U.S. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland last week signed a water compact for a Northwest Montana tribe that's been in the works for decades. Aaron Bolton has more on the largest water rights settlement in U.S. history.
The Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes relinquished thousands of water rights claims off the Flathead Indian Reservation in exchange for nearly $2 billion that will repair a large irrigation system on the reservation. The landmark deal has also returned the National Bison Range on the reservation to the tribes. The range remains open to the public, and the transition to tribal management has already been taking place. The Water Compact was first approved by state lawmakers in 2015 and was passed in Congress last year. For National Native News, I'm Aaron Bolton.
An email to tribal leaders from the National Congress of American Indians announces the 2021 White House Tribal Nations Summit, which takes place virtually in November. Tribal leaders and government officials will address Indian Country issues, policy initiatives, and goals. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus. Support by the Sanosky Chambers Law Firm, championing tribal sovereignty and defending Native American rights since 1976, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, coming to you live from my homelands of Sherhwitdui. I'm Tara Gatewood. Dene musician Kali Banali is with us today. He is our September music maker, and he is putting forth a project called Appropriation. And there are many songs on this project which really confront cultural genocide. And we know that we've heard a lot of times on this program that there are many things that feed into this. And so today we welcome him into our circle to talk more about this. And while we do it, we are going to get some pretty energetic sounds that are brought further to life with his strong vocals. This former Blackfire guitarist and vocalist has shared a little bit about this album and seeing it as disruption to dehumanizing forces attacking indigenous existence. Those are his words. And we'll hear why he shared that about this project. And you are also invited to join us too. It is our September Music Maker, which means we'll be sharing digital copies of the album with you today, or the project Appropriation. To get one, all you got to do is join us on air. Share your beautiful voice with us by dialing in 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And the first 10 people to make it on air will receive a complimentary copy of Appropriation. So go ahead and dial now. Again, the number 1-800-996-2848. And right now, it is my pleasure to bring in our guest who joins us today out of Flagstaff, Arizona, Kali Banali, and he is a member of the Dene Nation. Welcome to Native America Calling, Kali.
Hey, Yate Bene, greetings. It's great to hear your voice, and blessings for this transition of seasons, autumn equinox.
Yep, very special time. And Kali, also want to just give you a moment, too, if you would like to make any introductions to community members out there as well.
Yeah, Yate, she Kali, Dasha Jinne, Torich Eatney, Shabashis, Chino, Kurdine, Dashanella, Shema, E, Beza, Chi, Otto, Beza, Chi, Dasha Che. So, originally come from Black Mesa, currently I reside here in Kinflana, or so-called Flagstaff, at the base of the holy San Francisco Peaks. As many of you know, we've been fighting for, it seems like, generations now to protect this holy site. And on my father's side, I'm Totich Eatney, or Bitterwater, Nakadina, my Nellies, and then my mother's side, Russian-Polish.
Well, thank you for that, and thank you for making those relations. And Kali, I'll just turn it over to you. Introduce us more to this work, Appropriation, and why you call it an intervention as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm a complicated musician, I guess, and I guess that's not my words. I've been called that. sometimes I feel that, you know, the responsibility of musicians in times of crises, especially political, social, and economic crises, is to, you know, get at the heart of the matters and tell the truth and address things that in ways that other folks might not be able to verbalize or communicate through creative expression. And this doesn't just go for musicians, it goes through all sort of artistic expression. I was raised particularly in more traditional understandings that there's no dichotomy between art and life. And so, you know, the idea that sort of has been imposed by this, you know, trading post economy on Indigenous people, where our existence has been commodified and segregated or separated and dissected into things that can be sold for tourists, is really something that has defined us to the point where, you know, we're sort of in many ways fighting with ourselves. And there's a lot of powerful knowledge, a lot of things and ways that we express ourselves that I think can be part of a healing process. And so as an artist, I feel that it is important to understand your role as a healer in addressing these issues. So sometimes I'm a filmmaker, sometimes I'm a writer. And with this project, it actually came out of a film project that was Power Lines. It's a feature film that I wrote and directed, and it addressed the impacts and implications of forced relocation, because the area where I come from, my family's homelands, has faced forced relocation. The area on Black Mesa and throughout the Big Mountain area and outlying areas. So I wanted to tell a story that was a bit fictional, but based upon the reality of dispossession and displacement and dehumanization. And so it's really a politically charged coming-of-age story about a young Diné poet who runs away from an abusive household and actually finds her home. She reconnects to her place of home. And so it's a cultural healing story in some ways. It challenges a lot of assumptions about the political land dispute, which really was imposed as a divide and conquer tactic by the U.S. Colonial forces for resource grabbing and exploitation. And so that movie, it was actually produced with Outer Backpack Media, which unfortunately is not around anymore, but that was a youth project that I helped to start in 2004 here in occupied Kansana. And we basically, through that project, we mentored Indigenous youth, taught them how to make films, taught them about media literacy, so how media impacts our identity, especially popular cultural narratives shape who we are. Taught them how to understand it, and then taught them about media justice, basically finding ways to ensure that our narratives are told, and that if, you know, there are biases that exist or dehumanizing rhetoric that's used, the ways that we can challenge them. And so we spent a lot of years teaching young people how to make films. And so a lot of the mentors and a lot of the people who were mentored through the project helped to produce, co-direct, film, and act in this film. And so, long story short, we arrived to this appropriation project because the soundtrack of the film was something that I wrote, I collaborated with a few folks on, and I always wanted to turn the soundtrack into a standalone album. But it was just a lot of energy and a lot of resources that were sucked into making a feature film. It's a lot more challenging than I expected. And it's no easy task, just a warning for all y'all independent filmmakers out there, low budget. Sure. But it was powerful. And through the process, I wrote a lot of music that I really felt I wanted to produce as a project that wasn't just an extension of the soundtrack of a film, but also not something that was just a band or, like, you know, the sort of like musical career. Because I've sort of been there and done that with Blackfire for like 25 years. I think we were discussing this. I think we go back like 16 years or so, connecting with Blackfire. So that old history stuff. But I wanted something that was, you know, I guess to stimulate aggression against the spectacle of settler colonial order. And I took that term appropriation because I felt like it would be fun to play with in a way that was provocative and antagonistic towards what appropriation represents and is, and challenge notions of taking without consent, which is appropriation, and going deeper to challenge cultural appropriation and looking at the complexities of internalized and externalized forms of colonialism and the inherent intergenerational traumas and violences that are consequences of that. And so a bit of that is this album, and it's cathartic. It's a challenge. It's a provocation. It's like the big punk rock middle finger that I think is necessary in the face of overwhelming oppression, exploitation, dehumanization, and ecocide.
And you know what? It's really interesting to know that where these songs first had a home and how they helped the film Power Lines really come to life. And I think that when we really think of the importance of the songs that come from our communities, or just expressions, maybe we don't even call them songs. We give them a better name in our traditional languages, or give them a name that really speaks of the power that they have. They're telling stories, and there are sounds that go to it that even open up even more. And so coming up right after the break, we're going to give you a sample of all of this. But Clee, when we really think about our ability to tell stories, especially to talk about the situations that we are in, there's a lot that opens up. And we got about a minute before the break. And one hope that you have open that this project opens up. Go ahead.
Well, first, getting to your point about our, you know, our stories and our songs and healing, there's a reason that Diné medicine practitioners are called Hatatlis. That word means singers. Our songs, our prayers, our healing. And so my hope is that reconnection. I think that that's the most powerful thing that we have, that anything that exists in this world, if it can't be reconciled through our ancestral knowledge and teachings, then perhaps we don't have a use for it. We should find ways that we can make sure that we maintain balance, harmony for healthy, livable futures.
Indeed. Well, you know what? We're going to get straight to that coming up right after this break. With us today on the line is Diné musician Clee Benally. If you'd like to talk with him directly, all you got to do is dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. He is sharing a project that he calls Appropriation. It's being released on vinyl, but today we are connecting you with digital copies courtesy of Clee. And to get one, all you got to do is dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Go ahead and share your thoughts. And just hearing the space that he is making for us today, I'd really like to know how that's making you feel. And more things that you think we need to dialogue, maybe even through sound, like you're about to hear. So get ready for more energy coming up right after the break. Clear some space. Turn up the volume. Get ready for it, because we're going to give you this sound coming up right after the break. And again, if you want to join us, go ahead and dial 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Go ahead and give us a ring. Phone lines are open.
Maintaining independence can be a challenge for some Native people with disabilities. They often face underfunded and understaffed resources. In rural settings, services are hard to get to. On the next Native America Calling, we'll talk about overcoming obstacles to independent living.
Smoking gave me COPD, which makes it harder and harder for me to breathe. I have a tip for you. If your doctor gives you 5 years to live, spend it talking with your grandchildren. Explain to them that your grandpa's not going to be around anymore to share his wisdom and his love. I haven't figured out how to do that yet, and I'm running out of time.
COPD makes it harder and harder to breathe and can cause death. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
You're tuned in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, here with you today and introducing you to some more sounds as we do each month. Feature different musicians and people who are bringing story to sound. Today we have with us on the line is Kaliban Ali. He comes to us from the Diné Nation, and he is sharing his project, which he calls Appropriation. Kali, great to have you here with us. And you know what? I was really excited about hopping on air today and thinking about the kind of stories that would be shared because of the music that we are bringing out. And definitely, we're going to go ahead and give them a sound from this project Appropriation, and I want to know what story opens up for you as you listen to this song. So let's go ahead and sample one from Appropriation. This is Nothing for Ourselves.
Of our lives unfolding, carved so generations can know that this cycle can be broken. The wretched of the earth, understanding the trauma of the land. We are so deeply connected, more than we think we understand. I know it's hard, but you're not alone. Just meet me halfway, and we'll end this cycle. We'll pry it up from its roots.
And there you have it, one off of the project Appropriation. The voice behind that, one of the voices in that track that you heard, is here with us today. Kaliban Ali is on the line. If you'd like to tell him what you think of this gift, give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. It is our September Music Maker, and that means we are also sharing copies of the sound. We have digital copies to share with you today. To get one, dial right now. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go ahead and go to our phone lines. First up, we're going to say hi to Eric in Bloomfield, New Mexico, tuned in on KSUT. Eric, thank you for reaching out. Go ahead. You're on air.
Yes, hey, I'm proud of you, young brother. This is one of your brothers from Four Corners area, from Towering House 10. I'm proud of you, man. You're just like a young Tom B. You're reaching out, making the people feel empowered. And we try to reach out to our young ones. They get tired of us preaching. Maybe there's another way for them to embrace their native, their indigenous.
Thanks for reaching out. Go ahead, continue.
Makes us feel proud, man. You're trying. I always tell our younger people, learn your language, be who you are, embrace who you are. Putting on feathers, putting on power regalia, don't make you native. It's learning your language, knowing your culture that makes you native. So thank you. Thank you, brother.
Thank you for that, Clay. Anything for Eric?
Oh, no. Yeah, I think it's part of the challenge and the complexities of these times is how fragmented our ways of being are, and we need more people like you, Eric, and other folks in our community to step up to reconnect, you know, on those levels. So, yeah.
Thank you, Eric. And you can dial in to 1-800-996-2848. And we also have digital copies to share with you, too. And we look forward to hearing from you. And again, what you think about this sound. And so, Clee, there are many lines in that track that we just heard. But walk us through some of it and some of the spirit behind it.
Well, first, I'd like to just mention that Sage Bond is doing guest vocals there. And she is a powerhouse of talent. She's Dine, and I think from Tuba City. You can check her music out on reverbnation.com/sagebond. But I just asked her to lend some vocals to this project. She came down, we recorded at Tullahoan Info Shop, which is a community center that we operate here in Flagstaff. And she just did an amazing job, and highly recommend checking out her amazing, amazing work. But as far as the song, first of all, I need to just state that the statement or the assertion, everything for everyone, nothing for ourselves, that is a powerful assertion that comes from the Zapatista Liberation Army that was established in the 1990s and who rose up in 1994 against free trade agreements that were sort of leading this neoliberal or global capitalist movement that was threatening to destroy and still threatens to destroy and has decimated many indigenous communities throughout the world. And so part of their politic, I should say more of their social way of being and their cultural, the ways that their cultures inform their politic is that they said that we... everything for everyone, nothing for ourselves, that they were, this was a selfless movement. And it connects to this idea of for Dine people or our relationality, our mutuality, really in relation to our cosmology or all of existence. And so this statement, everything for everyone, nothing for ourselves, is about mutual aid. And a lot of folks have heard that term, mutual aid, especially in response to the COVID-19 pandemic crisis. Those words, even though I wrote this song back in, I think, 2014 still have that meaning and implication to this day. I think the most poignant lyrics are about finding your way through the challenges that we face in this world, the multiple forms of violence, the sort of internalized violence, externalized violence, the structural violence and lateral violence and so forth. And then realizing that there's a statement at the end where it says I can't remember right now, but it's basically somewhere a library is burning. And I credit Ross Kadi for this statement. It's a reference to his statement. And Ross Kadi is an indigenous music maker from the Ohlone lands in the so-called Bay Area. He has a band called One Struggle, but his statement is that every time a library burns, or every time an elder dies, a library burns. It's like a library burning. And to me, that always hit home very strongly because that's true. And during this pandemic, we've lost so much knowledge in our community, so many knowledge holders. And that's been what our rush to do mutual aid and to provide necessary resources and support on the front lines where this pandemic has hit our people the hardest has been, is to make sure that those most vulnerable in our communities, those knowledge keepers and holders, that they are protected as much as we can. But we also recognize that responsibility that we have to hold to ourselves to maintain that knowledge and to carry that forward. So, yeah, there's a lot going on in the song. That's just one part of it.
Well, people get a chance to explore some of it, too, when they get their hands on the album. which we are also giving away copies of today, digital copies. Dial us, share some thoughts with Klee, ask some questions, and maybe even tell us of how far you like to take music to speak of who you are as an Indigenous person, who you are as a human being. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. I'm Tara Gatewood, and now we turn to one of our callers. On the line with us today is Robert in Pocatello, Idaho, tuned in on KISU. Robert, thank you for reaching out. Go ahead. You're on air.
Thank you very much. I'm very, very moved by the music that I have just heard, and I'd like to thank the gentleman for bringing that to us. I'd also like to make another couple of comments. I'm not Native American myself, but I want maybe you all to know that we're all brothers and sisters. You already know that maybe better than anyone, and that the Native American cultures hold in trust for the health of the world the visions of sustainability, and which well, we've certainly lost our way, and it's an honor to be speaking with you, and it's also moving to realize that these eternal messages may be in your hands as keepers of the flame to be brought back to we, your brothers and sisters, who have accidentally gotten lost along the way. So my very best to the spirit that motivates you, and it's been a pleasure listening to your program today.
Robert, thank you for sharing that. Wish you good thoughts, too. And you know what, Klee? Let's give him some more energy. We're going to go to another one of the songs off of the project Appropriation. This is Violator.
Let's talk about heteropatriarchy. Missing and murdered relatives. How indigenous resistance must be militant, queer, and intersectional feminist. Let's talk about restoring mutual aid, collective support and solidarity, colonial system, force dependence, and break our community. About authoritarianism, how violence is systemic. Not colonial institutions, nowhere is safe when it's always war. Burn it to the ground, from the ashes we will build a life once thought forgotten.
There's no trigger warning when global warming is a consequence of war against our mother. Violated, forced sterilized, forced assimilated, forced down our throats. And where did you come from? Where are you going? Our bodies are the front lines. This is war. Burning.
You just heard it. One from Klee Banali. Call in and tell him what you think. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. How rowdy did you get on that track? I want to know. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Elders, if you got moved by that one too, I want to hear from you as well. give us a ring right here. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And of course, we are still giving away digital copies of Appropriation, courtesy of Clee Benally. And Clee, I just got to know, how did it feel recording that track and just letting loose that kind of energy?
Well, part of the reason I appreciate creative expression, especially punk rock, is because of its cathartic, way of transforming things, transforming, like, anger. I think there's a lot of misconceptions about anger and unhealthy ways of approaching anger, especially in a range of communities. Like, with Blackfire, we spend a lot of time doing tours throughout reses, sometimes going into juvenile detention facilities and other places. And a lot of times people, it was clear that they were taught to bottle up their anger and hold it inside. But what happens is you then risk imploding or exploding with that anger, instead of recognizing that anger is a secondary emotion. It's always caused by something. So actually going back to our original teachings and getting to the root cause, what's causing this environmentally, socially, and so forth, and then what can be done to transform that anger, because it's a powerful force, into something that can really bring a more profound transformation, whether it's individually or collectively. And I think that that's an important part of the healing process that we forget. And sometimes we just pile into these notions that, oh, anger's bad, you know, stay away from that, or so forth. But we have to be honest with ourselves. And that's what I like about punk rock, is it's brutal honesty sometimes. I did want to just go back real quick to something that Robert brought up, because this album, this project, isn't a project to make settler colonizers feel comfortable. It's actually an unsettling project. So I want to sort of get away from these ideas of romantic notions of indigenous people, which, you know, are stereotypes. I mean, some of them are correct stereotypes. I mean, if we get down to it, but
sure. And some of them really create a lot of, I don't know, you finish that sentence for me. Clee, hang tight. We got to go to break here. But if you'd like to talk to him directly, now is the time to call in. Don't wait another minute. Now's your time. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we look forward to hearing from you today, and what this music, what it's changed for you since the top of the hour, and how you're thinking now. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number, and we have more digital albums to share.
Are you a Native American entrepreneur? Have a business solution for an issue like COVID recovery or green energy? The Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program is a federal program helping private lenders make the business loan you need. They support most businesses, whether starting up or expanding. Information available by emailing dci@bia.gov. That's dci@bia.gov. The Division of Capital Investment supports this show.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and hearing these sounds today is really livening things up for me. And here we are. The week is going, and now you get some chance to share a little bit about the music you're hearing today. It is our September Music Maker with us on the line today from a very important place to Diné people and many other Native nations. There in the state of Arizona is Mr. Clee Benally, who joins us, and he's the voice that you're hearing on these different songs, this project called Appropriation. And Clee, just wanted to give you a moment to just kind of also pick up on your thought. Anything more you wanted to share?
Yeah, I was just talking about stereotypes and just how, you know, so if we look at cultural appropriation, it occurs when the appropriator has experienced their own cultural death or sense of entitlement, and it's driven to spread that urge by feeding off over cannibalizing indigenous ways of being. And so under colonial occupation, the vibrant living existence of those who colonizing forces could not really extinguish becomes objectified, extractable. You know, it's an act of total consumption of indigenous being, or an extraction of indigenous existence. And it's really, you know, what we name when we talk about the connections between colonialism and capitalism.
you know, when our ways of being have been ravaged by genocide, when our very beings have been ripped apart and restitched, the ongoing process of surviving intergenerational trauma, this kind of cultural predation resumes the brutal dehumanization that fulfills the death of indigenous existence. And it's that very that's the very definition of genocide. So, you know, for me, it's whether it's our minds, our bodies, our spirits, and this is very much a spiritual fight or spiritual war or sacred lands, the violation and the exploitation first becomes permissible in society through dehumanization. You know, if we're talking about missing and murdered indigenous women, girls, trans and two-spirit relatives, to boarding schools or residential schools or sacred lands, desecration for a pipeline, as we see in Line 3, or as we've previously seen with Dakota Access Pipeline, or the border walls desecrating Autumn lands, or ski area desecrating the Holy San Francisco Peaks. You know, when we are viewed as less than human, our abuse is not an exception, it's expected. And so this gets down to, you know, Columbus's so-called discovery or racist mascots or a hipster in a headdress and, you know, maybe even a hyper-sexualized Halloween costume, because these are all violent capitalist white supremacist acts of exploitation and dispossession of indigenous existence. They cannot happen without dehumanization.
And Klee, we are entering another season, and with the season also comes appropriation that often happens. And you mentioned one of them, costumes, as well as some of the dialogue that happens when we think of Indigenous Peoples Day, which, boy, it's almost here. Any thoughts about educating more about how sometimes this season brings forward some of these kind or appropriation gone wild? Anything you want to share?
Too much. I've actually written a lot about this, and we run a podcast at indigenousaction.org, which I highly recommend folks checking out. We have one zine and a show that we did on Indigenous Peoples Day, and it's actually uprooting colonialism, going beyond Indigenous Peoples Day, because, you know, today we have, like, for example, the city of Flagstaff hypocritically celebrates Indigenous Peoples Day, and at the same time, they profit off of our cultural genocide by maintaining a contract to sell 180 million gallons of treated sewage to spray on the San Francisco Peaks ski resort for recreation. And in the face of climate change, you know, so they celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day while profiting off of our cultural devastation. So, you know, we need to make Indigenous People's Day about a day of accountability. And so there's actually a crew out there that, and I think it's posted on indigenousaction.org, that is celebrating Indigenous People's Day of Rage to actually challenge the core root causes of colonialism and address these issues that we're facing on a more deeper level. Because it's one thing to have what Glenn Coulthard in the book, a powerful book called Redskins White Mask, asserts as the politics of recognition. So we can be recognized, but does that mean that we have justice? When the politics of liberation through anti-colonial struggle would actually result in justice for our people. If we were really going to talk about land back, we're going to talk about these things, we need to go beyond just addressing the inequalities and talk about liberation.
Well, thank you for that. Maybe some of that's going on right now for our listeners. If you'd like to share some thoughts with Klee, give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. We now take a call. Let's go ahead and say hi to Michael, who's in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Thanks for giving us a ring, Michael. You're on air.
Hello. Thank you so much. I'm completely delighted. Thank you. Yes, are you there?
Yeah.
Yes, are you there?
Go ahead, Michael. Sure,
yes,
go ahead.
Delighted to be on. Quick question. I'm the whitest of white males. What is the, is there a definition of the line between appropriation and appreciation?
All right, Michael, thanks for asking. Go ahead, Klee.
Well, it's just about consent. I think the line is always about consent, and that goes for anything in our lives. You know, we're talking about missing and murdered Indigenous women. You know, a lot of the times we're, you know, not talking about the preventative actions to address, like, cis heteropatriarchy in our communities. And the same thing with cultural appropriation is that, you know, it has to be about consent. throughout history, there's been meaningful exchanges with cultures throughout the world. But those meaningful exchanges are usually an agreement or some kind of negotiation or some kind of exchange. But if you're just taking, that's not appreciation, that's appropriation, and that's an act of violence.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Clee. Again, thank you, Michael, for your call. We now go to Gordon, who is in Red Lake, Minnesota, tuned in today. Thanks for giving us a ring, Gordon. You're on air.
All right, I just wanted to tell him that I met you guys, your whole family, when I lived in Flagstaff in the late 70s, and I used to be with Simon Toya's dance troupe, and I got to meet your father and how he spoke so reverently about the mountain standing at the Museum of Northern Arizona and the trees, and you guys were dancing and putting on a performance, and I just wanted to say I was so proud to meet you guys and meet your father and what he stood for. And I just want to tell you, you're doing a really good job. I love what you're doing, and just keep it up. I'm 70 years old, and I'm an old member of the American Indian Movement from Minneapolis when it first started. And I back you up 100%, and don't stop. Keep putting the word out there, and thank you so much.
Hey, Gordon, good to hear your voice. I've been thinking about the lakes there, and just good thoughts to all those folks who are harvesting right now, that beautiful Manuman. Thanks for your call. Clee, go ahead. Anything you want to tell Gordon?
That's just incredible. And yeah, I haven't thought about those days in a long time. Simon Toya and the whole family, it's a really strong connection. I think that era has influenced who I am deeply, you know, from the matriarchs up in Big Mountain who initiated the resistance to forced relocation to those, you know, who are committed deeply with the real original principles of the American Indian Movement, standing for autonomy, to me, and direct action. To me, that's what has really shaped where I'm at today and why I think, you know, it's important to be loud sometimes and challenge and unsettling and provocative and agitational. That's why I like to sometimes ruffle feathers, go into a space and say, hey, let's shake things up. You know, this, we can't be comfortable about these issues. These aren't easy things to talk about. And sometimes that's part of the healing process. We have to be honest with ourselves.
Let's go to more of that honesty. I'm going to give you another one off of appropriation. And again, if you like what you're hearing or you want to share some thoughts about what you're hearing, you can always reach out to us. You can even email us comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And we have a few digital copies left. So dial now. We now go to Going in Circles.
Comfortable with the contradictions, opportunistic dialectism in a ton of overly academic terms. Caught in the afterthought, repackaged all the regrets that you had bought and were just tracing the damage patterns. And now we're just tracing the damage patterns. Did you forget where you came? Existential but not consequential, it's essential but non-denominational and bipartisan. Don't mean ish in this imperialist context, and the system and the ship that brought it in. Decolonialism and an aboriginal sin, and 500 years later we still resist. And it should be unsettling, and it should be very unsettling. Did you fall? Came from, are you just going in circles? Did you forget where you came from? Are you just going in circles? tracing the damage patterns. All the ashes scattered where our fields once stood, and they're still reading between the lines, searching for something good. But there's nothing redeeming here. This ain't no song for redemption. So you're a form of straight abolition, yeah. You're a form of straight abolition. Did you forget where you came from? Are you just going in circles? Did you forget where you came from? Are you just going in circles?
Mm-hmm. Tracing the damage patterns. Wow, those lyrics, Klee. Anything you want to say about that song?
Well, more than anything, I think the lyrics speak for themselves. I'm usually very upfront. and as I mentioned, agitational. I get in, like, this whole project appropriation is just propaganda for anti-colonial struggle. So however folks can find it useful on the website, appropriationproject.com. There's some resources and a letter, like, for folks looking at ways to engage. I also have a lot of resources at indigenousaction.org on, like, accomplices or allyship, and a piece that I helped to author called Accomplices, Not Allies, back in 2014, I think. But I think the main thing I want to just make clear is that I'm a radical. Like, I believe in, I don't believe in reform-based solutions to address the situation we're in. I mean, when we ask ourselves, honestly, why and how are we dispossessed and by what forces, it's natural that the question that follows is what can be done. And so if we look at climate change being the greatest threat facing humanity, from a traditional standpoint, and I've heard this from many elders and medicine practitioners, it's critical to understand that global warming is a consequence of the war that has been waged against Mother Earth, that people who refuse to live with and work with nature, and that our sacred sites are integral to maintain balance with the natural order, our prayers, our ceremonies, and so forth. So to fully stop these mines, you know, we are still trying to clean up abandoned uranium mines, but they're trying to open up new uranium mines around Havasupai Sacred Site of Red Butte near the Grand Canyon, and they're still desecrating the Holy San Francisco Peaks and wondering why our fields are drying up and why the water is drying up in the Colorado River. It's because we're not living with nature. We're living against nature. So these power plants, these dams, these pipelines, they have to stop, but we have to stop the political machinery and systems that generate them as well. And so for me, it's not about incremental change, it's about abolishing them. And so anti-colonial struggle is a strategy for radical reconnection and intervention. It's coming back to our original teachings and expressing or replacing the principle of sort of political authority. And this is my grandma, Roberta Blackgoat, as one of the matriarchs in resistance up in Big Mountain, always said that the white man's law is not her law. She lives with the law of the land. And that means no law can be above nature. And so we want to replace that political authority. And these are her teachings, just my words, sort of shifted around them, with the principle of autonomous indigenous mutuality, meaning that we come back to that understanding that we're all connected, and that in this point, to get from one point of this disharmony to a point of harmony, we have to live a life in conflict with these authoritarian constraints or colonialism, capitalism, cis-hetero patriarchy, white supremacy. And to do so on stolen occupied land is a negation of settler colonial domination. And we have elders still to this day who maintain these ways of being, maintain our prayers. And it's a challenge to live our lives in accordance with our beliefs, but this is an aspiration, and that is a healing path. It's a path that is very powerful. And if we understand this as a spiritual war as well against Mother Earth, then we can all be healers.
Thank you for that. And Klee Benally, as we exit out again, if people want to connect with appropriation, and we didn't even get a chance to talk about the art that goes with it. Real quick, where do people find it?
Appropriationproject.com. You can also go to kleebenally.com. And also indigenousaction.org. So check it all out.
All right. Thank you for that. And that's going to wrap up our program today. Our September Music Maker with Klee Benali. Thank you, Klee, for also sharing digital copies of Appropriation. And you know what? You get an invitation to come back again tomorrow as Native America Calling jumps into another conversation about improving the lives of Native people who are living with disabilities. If there is something you have to say on that, you want to start the conversation right now, we invite you to post on Facebook or even send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. I'm Tara Gatewood. Thank you for sharing this space with us today. And we'll meet you here again tomorrow, signing on air, our usual time.
The Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention remind you, receiving the COVID-19 vaccination protects you, your family, and your community. And urge you to please contact your tribal or urban clinic to get your COVID-19 vaccination if you haven't already. More information at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus who support this show. Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's AMERIND.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.